Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. The Champions League Tuesday continues, but we're looking ahead to Wednesday now. Juventus take on Celtic, and Pirlo is saying that he still remembers blowing that lead to Liverpool in the Champions League final. There's going to be no doubt that Juventus are the favourites, though, for Wednesday night's game, and we've got one of our favourites joining us on the line now, Mr. Chris Vokes from Goal.com. It's Chris Vokes, it's KV, it's Vokesy. You've got so many names here on World Football Daily, Chris. I mean, which one do you want? Anything? Nothing? What are we going with?
I don't know. Legend?
Legend. All right, we could use legend if anything. You want. the legend, Chris Vokes. Let's go with that. It's fantastic to have the legend back on the WFD airwaves once again. And before we start looking at the Champions League coming up this week, we have to look back at the Serie A weekend. And that Friday night, Juventus taking on Napoli, and Napoli unable to get the victory at home over the Serie A league leaders. A big opportunity missed out for Napoli on Friday night.
Yeah, kind of. It was the kind of last chance saloon in a way for Napoli Friday night's game, because Juve and Amadazzi are the best team in Serie A, and it would have taken a huge run in from Napoli to overhaul them now. And the thing is, having blown the chance to take points off Juve themselves, you don't really see them kind of closing down on Juve now. So it was a real kind of last hope for them. And the fact that they couldn't take the 3 points, the fact that Juve remained six clear and theoretically a 6.5 clear now because they've got the head-to-head wrapped up over Napoli, you just feel that these last 11 games are just going to be about Juve not quite coasting in, but certainly doing more than enough to get a back-to-back title.
Is that the talk in Italy as well, Chris? Or because we've seen Juventus stumble in 2013 on a couple of occasions now to teams that we would have expected them to breeze past. I mean, are the papers in Italy saying that this is the title race done and dusted, pretty much?
Well, to an extent, they're trying to kind of stoke the fires a little bit, but there's a lot of realism as well, and the fact that Napoli seem to just blow opportunities when they do get close. You know, they have been within 3 points of Juve at one point when Juve were stumbling around January, February time. But then, you know, Juventus have got that ability to just pick it up again and get a couple of big results that put them back in a position of strength. And, you know, they're sixth clear now and there's only 11 games to go. And as I say, with that Friday night game having been negotiated, it just seems that maybe that was the last chance for Napoli now.
Has there been any talk at all about Cavani and this dry spell that he's on at the moment? It's 7 games now without a goal for Lazio and for Napoli, and obviously and didn't really shine against Juventus on Friday night either.
Well, there's been a little bit of talk, kind of certainly in the lead up to the Juve game. But as much as anything, it's been that knock-on effect. You know, we said about Napoli has kind of missed opportunities of late, and a lot of that has been down to the fact that they are highly dependent on Cavani now. Since Lovetti's gone, like that kind of dual spotlight that used to happen, well, both of those lights are shining on Cavani now. And, you know, that was their fourth draw on the trot on Friday night. And that has been largely down to the fact that they've not been able to score goals. I think they'd drawn 0-0 in 2 games before that, and then they'd only drawn 1-1 with Lazio. So they've only scored 2 goals in 4 games when Cavani's been struggling to score goals himself. So it's been that knock-on effect of Cavani not being able to score, and what that has done to Napoli that people have really kind of concentrated on, rather than kind of looking into the means and whys and wherefores of Cavani not scoring. Cavani is going to go through a dry spell at some point, and he's going through it at the moment, and just Napoli haven't been able to cope with that.
And it was all the more disappointing as well against Juventus because Maradona was in the stands, that hero of Naples, and another hero was made in Serie A football this weekend with Francesco Totti scoring his 225th goal. Is Totti to Roma what Maradona was to Naples right now?
Well, I think that they're very different types of hero. Obviously, Maradona was only in Naples for 7 years, but you know, he had the greatest effect possible. It was all about him. He was, certainly in my mind, he's the greatest player that's ever played football, and his best spell was during that 7 years in Naples. And he brought unparalleled success to the to the club and to the city. You know, two titles, the UEFA Cup. They were just winning trophies that you'd never have thought possible before then. The difference with Totti, of course, is that he's been a one-club man right through. He signed a new five-year contract a couple of years back, and you thought, well, you know, that's a bit excessive. And they said about how the kind of tail end would be as a director of the club rather than as a player. And you'd think at the time, well, that's 2 or 3 years as a director, I guess. He could play out the five the way that he's going, because he's actually in better form now than he was 2 years ago when he signed the deal. So, the difference with Totti, I suppose, with Totti and Maradona is that Totti has very much from the start known exactly the kind of deal with the Roma fans, what they love. They love a local boy who play with his heart and his soul. The fact that he turned down the likes of Real Madrid in the past when he was at the very top of his game has obviously endeared him to the fans as well. And whilst Maradona came in and was very much an emblem of the kind of young poor lad off the streets that a lot of people in Naples could really hang their hat on, Totti's just over 20 years now, has just been an absolute legend for Roma. And the fact that he did play a part in their third title, obviously nobody will ever forget that, but it's the fact that he's just gone on and on and on and continues to really, as I say, play with that heart and that soul that Roma fans really love him.
I mean, Totti is one of those players that obviously reaching this incredible milestone. I think it's the second highest ever scorer in Serie A in Serie A history. But you don't see him as that out-and-out striker, like, say, a Cavani. You don't see him like a Falcao. Very much a playmaker as well. Is it almost a surprise that someone like Totti has got to this number of goals in Serie A football, Chris?
Yeah, there were certainly periods of his career where he was very much a second striker, and you know, he wasn't a 20, 25 goal a season man, really. And then, when particularly under Luciano Spalletti, when he changed to a 4-2-3-1 and had Totti playing on his own up front, but with three superb attackers kind of rushing beyond him, and they almost played a 4-2-4 basically with Perotta, Mancini, and Taddei on the right. They were just kind of getting beyond him and forming all sorts of problems for opposition attacks. And Totti was able to really revel in that. The fact that he had three players rushing beyond him, there was great link play between them. It was about the time that, just after that, Modric was coming through as well and really doing good stuff with Roma. And during that period, he just couldn't seem to stop scoring because they really played around him in a way that they just decided, well, you know, we've not got some of the players we've had before, we've not got the Batistuta, we've not, Osman Teller's kind of towards the end of his career now. They really hung their hat on Totti and you know, he scored a fantastic amount of goals, and it's more been the kind of stamina of his goal scoring that's got him this high, because he does still score at quite a decent rate. He's, you know, he's gone through his spells over the last couple of years where he's not scored in a long time, but he's still been able to notch up those goals and so scored 225. When you look at the amount of fantastic strikers there have been over the years in Serie A, you know, Italian football is known for its quality in defence. And the fact that Totti can score 225 goals over a career against some of the defences that he scored them against, because, you know, as much as he scored against the Pescara's and stuff of the world, he's also scored an awful lot against the likes of the Milan's and Juve. So it's just a magnificent, magnificent record that he's got.
Chris, I want to just go back just before the weekend and the bust-up between Stramaccioni and Cassano at Inter Milan. It was a reasonably late story in the week. And apparently almost getting into fisticuffs, into an actual brawl at the training ground. How much did this affect Inter going into this weekend, do you think?
Well, it's a bit strange when these things happen, isn't it? Because, as Stramaccioni said, and he's completely right, these things happen at every training ground. It's like, you don't always hear about them necessarily, but they do happen. There was one only recently, of course, between Roberto Mancini and Mario Balotelli that was massively publicised and looked like a much bigger deal than perhaps the Cassano one. He said that they didn't come to blows, although reports suggest that you know, maybe they did. He was disappointed as much as anything that somebody had leaked the fact that there had been a bust-up rather than the fact that it had happened in the first place. He wants to see that bit of fire and passion about his players, and he's certainly going to get that from Cassano. And it was just, it was one of those things where I suppose if it had come after a Derby defeat, then maybe it would have had a bigger impact, because that second half against Milan last week was a bit of a boost, a bit of a fillip, and the fact that they got a point out of it, that game, was a kind of more of a moral victory for them than it was for Milan. And the fact that they were going into a game away to Catania, who were notoriously very good and very stubborn at home, you know, it could have really been a huge blow had they lost the derby and then had something like that happen. It could have split the camp a little bit. But the way that they responded, despite an appalling first half, was just absolute quality from them. That second half, it just showed that there is hope, there is life, that Stramaccioni does have a handle on the problems that are at the club. They do have a lot of problems still. But the way that they responded just shows that, you know, he's got a handle on it and he can really provoke a response from the side.
And extremely helped on the weekend by Rodrigo Palacio and his performance coming off the bench at half-time for the Nerazzurri. And Palacio's really started to get the job done for Inter over the last few weeks. We've seen him excel in the Europa League as well. How important is he making himself in this Inter side? Maybe somebody that wasn't expected to shine as much as he did at the beginning of the season. His name wasn't spoken about too much early on in Serie A.
Well, of course, his name wasn't spoken much about because Diego Melito was still in and he was still scoring goals. And obviously, Palacio was a bit of a star in the victory over Juventus as well, which was a kind of landmark moment in the season. It put them within, I think it was a point at the time, of Juve, but they have massively fallen away since then. But because Melito had scored as well and was having a fantastic run, I think he was about the fourth highest scorer in the whole world in 2012. That was just magnificent. And since Melito has been injured, they've realised now that there's not a lot of depth in that striking department at all at Inter. Beyond Palacio, you're looking at Cassano, who's very much a second striker, or, you know, then you're dipping into the likes of Tommaso Rocchi, who has just been an absolute, well, it just hasn't worked at all. Very few people expected it to work when he signed for Inter. So Palacio has certainly become more important since the loss of Melito, obviously. But he's one of these players. It was a very strange kind of scenario which saw him end up at Inter, because Giampiero Gasperini had very much wanted Palacio during his time at the club. He didn't get him. The club didn't really want him. So they didn't sign him. Gasperini lasted 5 games. They had another 2 coaches after that last season. And then all of a sudden, the following summer, they go and sign Palacio, and he's bagged about 18 goals now this season. It's been a very strange kind of turn of events that a few people have actually said, well, you know, if Gasperini wanted this guy a year before and he's done as well as he has now, was everything a little bit hasty with the whole Gasperini operation? Because they brought him in, albeit as about a fifth choice, he was still seen as a very astute coach and a very clever tactical coach. Palacio was a guy that he wanted in at the club. He didn't get him. He tried to do his own thing and didn't get it right within 5 games, but that was enough for Massimo Moratti to fire him. And a few people have seen it as a little bit of a reflection on some of the coaching decisions. Obviously, Stramaccioni is in there now and he's making the most of Palacio. And Palacio has proven that, you know, he's a great player, and maybe Inter missed the boat on not getting him a year quicker.
There's always those kind of what-ifs in football. Tomorrow night, Chris, there could potentially be a what-if. If very unlikely, though, should Celtic knock Juventus out. But they're in such a position of power going into Wednesday night's game. Chris, is there any way that Celtic can find a way back into this tie?
No. you spoke earlier about Andrea Pirlo, and there's been a lot of talk about Milan losing that lead that time. But that was just... It was over 45 minutes. What has also come to mind for me was last season, Milan being 4-0 up against Arsenal going into the second leg and going down 3-0 and losing all of those goals in the first half and very much, you know, turning in about the worst 45 minutes any Italian team has ever put in Europe, even, you know, including that second half against Liverpool in 2005. The difference with Juve is that You know, they're very much, even the fact that Pirlo's talking about that 3-0 lost lead in 2005, it means that they're guarding against it already. They've already spoken about it. They've already thought about it. We don't want to be dropping this lead. Also, it's against Celtic. It's not against Liverpool. It's not even against last season's Arsenal, which wasn't a great Arsenal. Celtic are not at that level. Another thing I'd throw in there is the fact that, you know, that 45 minutes against Liverpool was, I don't want to say a fluke, I don't want to put all of Merseyside against me, but it wasn't, you know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. They just really went for it. If Celtic put in a great 45 minutes against Juve, there'd still be another 45 minutes for them to actually hold Juve at. And I just can't see it happening. I just don't think Celtic have got the quality. They showed in the first leg that, you know, they had a lot of endeavour for 60 minutes, but they seemed tired and Juve just picked them off after that. And I just don't see Celtic getting close to them, to be completely honest.
Is there going to be an inkling at all of Conte maybe resting some players? Because they've got Catania coming up at home, obviously, on the weekend, which should be another 3 points for Juventus. But we've seen them stumble, as I say, in 2013. And they are holding a 3-0 away goals lead. Are we going to see any of the reserves almost coming out for Juventus on Wednesday?
You might change one or two, but I think you'll largely go with the same side that he normally does. I think that he'll go with his strongest, certainly strongest core wherever possible, and, you know, he'll go as close as he can to his usual back three. As much as anything, he probably wants to get another 90 minutes in the legs of Giorgio Chiellini, who obviously only came back on Friday night after a long layoff. He'll, again, in the centre of midfield, he'll get as close as he can to his best three, his MVP midfield. And then up front, he may make the odd change. He may go for a bit of a switch around. But for the largest part, I think he's going to take it fairly serious. As I say, the fact that they're talking about they don't want to blow their lead, they don't want it to be an embarrassment, he's going to go with, certainly for the first hour at least, as close as he can to his best side. And maybe if they're another goal up or so at half-time or an hour in, then he might start thinking of getting back the weekend game. But, you know, first and foremost, the Champions League is what they really, really want to go for now. They've got enough of a lead in Serie A that a draw against Catania wouldn't be the worst result in the world. Most of the attention, if not all of it, is definitely on this Celtic game.
Chris, a little birdie has been tweeting at me that you were watching some Major League Soccer on the weekend as well. Have you ever? Is this your first season delving into Major League Soccer? Is this something that you followed quite for the last few years now or so?
Well, like I suppose most European journalists, I've had at least half an eye on MLS since 2007, since David Beckham rocked up. You know, it's just one of those things. Certainly from my point of view, I try wherever possible to watch other leagues. Obviously, I am an Italian correspondent, but you don't get that kind of real knowledge of where the kind of Italian football is compared to other European leagues without watching the other European leagues, and certainly watching other world leagues as well is always good fun. From time to time watch a bit of Ukrainian league and stuff like that. Australian, the A League is quite a fun one to watch just because it's on a good time of day if you're in Europe, because it, you know, if you're starting a working day and you happen to work by a computer, you can get a stream of an Australian game on the morning. So it's good to watch live football in the morning. But the MLS is another one because it depends on something like that. But I try to watch the MLS game wherever I can get. You know, a handful of games in the season, maybe a dozen games or so. And Rafa was asking the other day on Twitter about my favourite MLS team, and it'd be no surprise that just having watched Beckham and the likes of Donovan and obviously Keane over the last few years, that I suppose if I had an MLS team, it would be the Galaxy. But the standard's not too bad. It gets a bit of a kick in. But the fact that the introduction of Beckham has brought in players like Rafa Marquez and Henry and obviously Keane and the likes, you know, it's brought up the standard of the league. And it was good to see actually at the weekend that the Home Depot Centre had about 18,000 to 20,000 people in there
even post Beckham, and it's going to be a big season in terms of the people turning out and the whole kind of legacy that Beckham has brought. Are there going to be more star players coming? There's all sorts of talk about Lampard, etc. It's going to be a very interesting season, MLS this year, I think.
Chris, and there was me thinking that you'd be following De Vio and Nesta and being a Montreal Impact fan up in Canada instead of the LA Galaxy. But all aboard the Glory Hunter bandwagon, if that is what you so please there, mate. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show, Chris. Always enjoy getting you on, mate. And we look forward to getting you back on as soon as we can.
Mate, you call me Glory Hunter for getting in my shift Wednesday, fam. And Galaxy done nothing until like a few years ago.
fair play. Yeah, it's hard watching Wednesday this season. That Forest performance on the weekend wasn't the best after the decent run that we'd had. But no, Chris, thanks so much, mate. Take care, and we'll catch up with you very soon.
Cheers, Ali.
Cheers, mate. Chris Vokes, the legend, as he so wishes to be called, joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football. Juventus taking on Celtic tomorrow night, and of course, as Chris rightfully says, there is almost no chance of Celtic pulling round that 3-goal away goals lead that Juventus have over the green and white hoops of Celtic going into the second leg in the Estadio Juventus. It's looking, I mean, we're talking about how difficult this game could be for Barca coming up next week against AC Milan, you know, having to go home with the 2-goal lead for Milan, and you know, if they score one away from home, then Barca have to score four, and it's obviously looking very difficult. But it's 3 away goals, and Celtic have never won in Italy. Juventus have played them twice now in Italy and beaten them both times. And they've never really looked like that close to beating Juventus either, really. There was that game in Turin that was 3-2 back in 2001. But if my memory rightly serves me, it wasn't that stressful and strenuous for Juventus that evening. But we'll say this, we don't know what can happen in football. And of course, Pirlo talking about the 3 goals given away in the second half in the Champions League final against Liverpool. Juventus obviously guarding against anything like that happening. Wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world. Well, it probably would actually be one of the biggest shocks in football. But at the same time, anything can happen in the Champions League. And that is why we love the knockout stages of this tournament, where anything, just about anything, can happen. We've still got the two huge games coming up tonight, of course, Real Madrid against Manchester United, Shakhtar in Germany taking on Borussia Dortmund. We'll have another look at those two games before we leave. That's coming up right when we come back here on World Football Day.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.